tonight. We gon' let it all hang down.
Well, let's get to the callers. I know we've still got a few more treat points, but we've got some very patient people who dialed in and want to get online with John, starting with, I believe it's Michael. Good morning and welcome to the program. How may we help you?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, I live out in the East Shea Corridor, so I'm on an acre and a half of property, a lot of caliche and stuff. But I had a sister tree put in about 7 years ago, and the thing's about 25 feet high. But that was planted about 15 feet from my septic tank. And I've noticed that the soil is cresting, going towards my septic, about 10 feet out from the tree. So my assumption is that the root system is creeping towards that septic. Do I need to cut that main root? Prevent some problems. I guess I might lose three, but that's my question for you.
Well, how far from the septic are you? How far
about
is the tree?
15. The tree is about 15 feet.
And where are you seeing all those that root activity? Right about that same distance?
Correct.
Yeah, you know, sisus are so vigorous, it probably would be a candidate for installing a root barrier. If you're concerned about root activity, and you don't want to wait until you have a problem, you might consider a root barrier. And this involves at some distance from the tree between the area you're trying to protect, maybe say 10 feet from the tree, you could trench across the roots, cut any roots that would be growing in that direction to a sufficient depth, you know, below the deepest root there. I would say 2 to 3 feet would be adequate. And then we install a polypropylene product that is a root deflector, and roots will not grow below it. As we said earlier, there's no oxygen at those depths of soil, so roots generally will not go down and dive underneath the barrier and come back up. And they'll essentially be deflected sideways because they'll be staying at that optimum depth of soil, which is wherever that might be in your textured soil, maybe 10 or 12 inches below grade maximum, and then they'll just be deflected sideways, and you can make the barrier as long as you want. And we found that to be a really great product and service that we've offered our customers for the last 10 years or so. We've installed a lot of them, and they're great. It's a great solution for protecting hardscape elements, sidewalks, driveways, pavers, and we've even installed them before we've done finished landscape, at the time trees are installed, so that you can have it done when all the irrigation, when the landscape is already disturbed. So it's a part of a pre-construction component as well.
And I don't know what it costs, but I can tell you this, it's a lot cheaper than the problems that will cause 5, 6, 7, 8 years if those roots get into that septic system.
Or when block walls start cracking and you start having other issues and having masonry problems and others.
Because that's always at the time the tree's just the size and beauty that you want, and then you got to cut it down because of
and
the structural damage.
And in answer to your question, there are some trees that would not withstand, trenching very close to the tree. Some trees have a tolerance for construction damage of varying levels. And there is actually a listing of trees according to tolerance to construction impacts. And sisus would probably be at the top of that list of the most tolerant. There are some trees, as I said, that are a lot more sensitive. We'd have to be kind of careful pushing that distance from the tree further and further away for a safe excavation. But if you're only cutting roots on one side of a tree, generally, you can do that pretty close to a tree without too many problems.
Next, we go to Richard, who's on the line, 1-888-767-4348. As we clear a line, that's a perfect opportunity to get on the line. Go ahead with your question, Richard.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Well, I've got one that sadly doesn't relate to trees, but it's a concern of mine. We've got built a fish pond in our backyard next to the patio. And we've got an open piece of desert out behind us. I've noticed with waterfall running initially, we seem to draw a few bees in, hanging around, looking like they're, you know, searching for water. And now that we've gotten water lilies established in the pond, They hang out on the flowers, of course, and then on the leaves, and apparently seem to be boring holes or eating a little bit of the leaves. And we're seeing, maybe 30 to 50 at a time sometimes out on that pond. And I'm concerned whether or not we've got a problem, safety problem for the family, our granddaughter, and all of the dogs we've got and everything else. I was wondering if you had any feeling for that.
Well, John, from what I understand in the rumor on the street, you love dealing with this issue. If there's a palm tree with a wasp nest in it, or you've got a tree with a beehive, they send John out. He loves these.
Yeah, well, the wasps are actually public enemy number one for those of us who are in the tree industry, because when you're up in a tree and you get stung by wasps, there's not too many escape routes that are very effective. You get stung pretty good. But no, with bees that are, you know, this is my understanding. Bees, when they're foraging, which those are, they're looking for water, and you've provided a convenient spot for them to be able to land and be able to get the water they need. It's hard for them to land on a pool surface like some wasps can do. And so when you have the lily pads and other things, it's a very convenient place for bees to hydrate. And they do need water. And usually when they're out foraging for pollen, in your yard, pollinating flowers or getting water like they're at your pond, they're generally not harmful. I mean, they're not going to be stinging you if you're just working around them, because they figure you're doing just what they're doing. You're out about doing your business. If you, of course, step on one, that they might sting you in response. But when you have a high number of bees like that, you might want to consider calling Paul Holdeman with the Pond Gnome. He deals with ponds and water features. Paul Holdeman with the Pond Gnome is a great company. They could probably give you some pointers, because they deal with this all the time. Because I know that ponds that I've seen recently, water features that I work around every day, I see some of them are just loaded with bees. So I know what you're speaking about, and I'm sure if Paul could give you a heads up in terms of maybe some control measures.
Well, there's a great place to start. Let's go to Tim with a question on mulching. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, and love your garden and plant show. I have a lot of pine needles and eucalyptus leaves. Can I use the pine needles as mulch and compost? And also, can I use the eucalyptus tree leaves as mulch and or compost? And I have another question.
Well, good. Pine needles are compostable, but they are very slow in composting. They're full of a lot of pitch, a lot of tannins, and there's a waxy sheath over those little needles, so they don't break down real well. They're a little hydrophobic, so they don't absorb a lot of water. If you do use them, you might want to consider crushing them, so it's allowing a lot more surface for water to penetrate. And just, you'll have to be patient. They will compost over time, but it's one of those components in a compost pile that's going to decompose slower than your other stuff. Eucalyptus leaves certainly can compost. It'd be nice to mix them with other green waste in your yard, maybe like your pine needles and others. There's some, you might want to do a little bit of research. There is some anecdotal, I really can't answer this. I have heard that eucalyptus are not the best compostable leaf. They can build up some molds. So if you're turning your compost pile regularly, you shouldn't have any problem, but don't allow that compost pile to sit for a long time. If that's all you have is eucalyptus leaves, they can create some molds that can be unhealthy to breathe. So just be careful on that score. If you're keeping them turned and aerated regularly and watered and keeping that compost composting, then you shouldn't have any problems, I wouldn't think.
Hang tight, Tim. We'll get your second question off the air as we move to Anthony, who wants to talk about fruit trees. Good morning, sir. Welcome to the program. How may John help you?
my dad has some orange trees in his backyard, and they were planted there before we moved into the house. But one thing we've noticed is the fruit, the trees look healthy and they look beautiful, and the fruit even looks good, but when you break it open, it's very bitter, and we've had a few people come out and look at it. No one seems to be able to figure it out, what would cause the fruit inside to be bitter when the whole tree looks good otherwise.
And are you sure that you...
It's not an ornamental.
It's not an ornamental orange? Because there are some... most of our sweet fruit here in Arizona is grafted onto a sour lemon rootstock. And sometimes that rootstock will take over. It'll grow, you know, it'll send up suckers from below the root graft, the graft union, and those branches will overtake the sweet fruit portion of the tree. And then all you have is the bitter orange left on top. It looks like an orange. It's actually a variety of lemon. That those, they look like oranges, but they're kind of have a wrinkled, bumpy, textured skin, and they it's not a good quality sweet fruit, sweet orange. So, are you sure that you might not have an ornamental orange?
I could. I mean, the skin is kind of bumpy and textury, like you're saying. It's mm-hmm. not a normal looking. It looks more like there's a grapefruit tree next to it that's awesome. And these oranges are they look orange. But, yeah, I don't know enough about.
Well, and sometimes sour oranges are planted as a screening plant because they make a wonderful screening plant. They're very popular for that reason.
To protect the grapefruit tree.
Well, maybe so. And the...
you mean privacy screen?
A privacy screen.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and they might have been intentionally planted, but they, if you, yeah, it sounds to me that that's maybe what you have is just you have a sour orange tree and it's not going to produce edible fruit. That you can make marmalades and even lemon lemonade out of those oranges. We've done that in the past. They make a unique flavored lemonade, but you. They are pretty sour. They look deceptively good when you grab one off a tree and cut it open and bite into it and find out it's terrible.
The glands in my mouth are just puckering right now. I'm thinking about
mine too.
All right, you have one more final point to make about roots, and then we'll hit break and then come back and finish the rest of the calls.
Well, yeah, we got cut a little bit short in talking about remedial measures when you have a tree that's planted too deep. We talked about resetting those younger trees that you know are planted too deep. If it's not, you can lift those in the soil, put a little additional soil underneath them, and actually lift them in their planting hole a little higher in the soil. But the other is to re-landscape. Older trees that are planted too deep can be re-landscaped by removing the soil above the root flare. So you dig down, find out that transition zone where the trunk becomes roots, and then excavate out from there 18 to 24 inches. If it's a larger tree, you could go even further. But take that soil all the way out. Well, you'll have the soil over the root zone now will be down to the level of the root collar, but it will be lower than the surrounding grade. And sometimes it'll be 3 or 4 inches below that, sometimes up to 6 and 8 inches. We've dug down and found trees that were 12 and 18 inches too deep. And
so,
sometimes at that point, the tree has tried to push out roots out of the trunk tissue, and it's a mess. But anyway, if it's six or, you know, under 6 inches of soil, and maybe down to 8 inches, you can dig out the soil in that whole area, get rid of it. Don't build a well around it and have that end up migrating back down. But then you have this there's two different soil levels, a surrounding grade, the original native soil grade, and then you have to dig down to find your root collar grade. So you'll be down lower. Your tree will be in a bit of a basin. Well, you can terrace around the outside of that that excavated area. We've put riprap, some large stones, or we've put brick in. We've actually put in some metal retainers, you know, actually some steel.
To keep the dirt from coming back in.
To keep the soil from getting back down around the root collar. And it's great. It's a great method of getting rid of that problem.